Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by AstraZeneca, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jessica S. Donnington, MD, MSCR, and Brendan M. Stiles, MD, about surgical perspectives on key lung cancer treatment developments. Dr. Donnington is a professor of surgery and chief of the section of thoracic surgery in the Department of Surgery at the University of Chicago in Illinois. Dr. Stiles is chief of thoracic surgery and surgical oncology, as well as the associate director of surgical oncology at Montefiore Einstein Comprehensive Cancer Center in the Bronx, New York, where he is also a professor in the Department of Cardiothoracic and Vascular Surgery, a professor in the Department of Oncology and Medical Oncology, and a professor in the Department of Medicine in Oncology and Hematology. In part two of our exclusive two-part interview, Drs. Donnington and Stiles discuss the implications of perioperative immunotherapy trials on early-stage disease management, definitions of resectability, and the incorporation of new guidance regarding multidisciplinary management according to the American Association of Thoracic Surgery, Society of Thoracic Surgeons, and National Comprehensive Cancer Network. What has the tie been between PD-L1 and some of these perioperative immunotherapy trials seen?
PD-L1 can get you overly excited, and the patient might turn out to have an EGFR mutation or ALK rearrangement, so one has to be careful. But certainly, there's a strong signal in most of the neoadjuvant and adjuvant trials that high PD-L1 is associated with improved response to immunotherapy. Now, there's a lot of variables that go into that, and the testing, is it done on the preoperative biopsy or on the whole tissue? We think it's more accurate on the whole tissue than on the preoperative biopsy. But sometimes we don't get all that tissue after neoadjuvant therapy. So there's definitely nuances. I think our practice is really not to exclude patients from neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy based on a low or negative PD-L1, but obviously the approvals are based on that in some places. So I think we need to keep thinking about it. We probably need to find other biomarkers that may contribute or be additive to PD-L1.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's not perfect. It's what we have. I definitely get clinically excited when I, have a patient who's got very high PD-L1, and I think we're going to see a good response, but it drives back the importance of the tissue. Right now in the surgical populations, a low PD-L1 or PD-L1 negative will not keep you from treatment, but it does make one think twice, at least in the adjuvant setting.
Yeah, the interesting thing for that is I find some people say, well, if they're low PD-L1, we're not so excited about giving neoadjuvant, but I'm almost more excited to give neoadjuvant because I think that adjuvant data is less strong for low PD-L1. And, that encourages me more to give combination chemotherapy, immunotherapy up front if they're low PD-L1.
I agree 150%. Absolutely. While there's not a super strong signal, it's way better in the neoadjuvant than in the adjuvant setting.
We saw the overall survival data from KEYNOTE-671 also at ESMO. That's the first perioperative trial to demonstrate an OS benefit, correct?
I think it's the only surgical immunotherapy trial so far to prove an OS benefit. It's the first one because CheckMate 816 doesn't quite have it yet. It was a much smaller trial, so a little bit harder probably to prove the OS benefit.
I agree. I think it's going to come with the other trials. It's going to take a little bit more time and maturity of the trials. We hate to always say that we're going to be right and we can get these signals, but I think it really speaks to this idea that these other endpoints are going to be valid, complete path response, and probably more importantly, EFS, particularly when we see wide intervals like this. And so, that to me adds more fuel to the fire that this neoadjuvant approach can work. And we still don't know the peri-adjuvant and the pre and post versus neo versus adjuvant. But I think we're all getting excited that we're improving the overall survival of our early stage lung cancer patients with these strategies.
Yeah. And I do have to admit, there are some old timers out there who weren't going with EFS. They were waiting for this OS before they were going to sign on. I feel very vindicated that it's there.
What would you say are some of the main messages and the effects of these trials on the AATS and STS, as well as NCCN guidelines in terms of multidisciplinary management?
It's going to be hard for all of them to keep up because I think the guidelines are changing by the week right now. But I do believe, the indication for neoadjuvant is, I think, clear and included in every guideline right now for stage 2 to 3A. The addition of adjuvant to neoadjuvant added to NCCN it'll be an interesting wording, because I don't know if we're seeing the benefit of added adjuvant to neoadjuvant yet, even though the trial is positive. It'll be some interesting wording.
And I agree. It's really tough to keep up, right? And so we wrote an ATS consensus guidelines last year, and just we kept waiting because more data kept coming in. We wanted to change it. And then as soon as we finally put it out, there's three more trials that come out. And so it's a fast-moving space, which is incredibly exciting. But I think as we get more options, it's almost like the stage four space. How do we balance it? What are the nuances? When do we use what? When do we start with just CheckMate 816 and say we're maybe not going to give it on the tail end versus start with a Keynote 671 approach? Probably a lot will depend on local preferences and local practice patterns for sure. But I do think it's important, as you allude to, that the STS, AETS, and others stay out in front of it and at least help to shape the thinking about this so that we can have equal care everywhere, really.
So I often hear it on Friday, applied on Monday. So what would you say, based on this discussion, you would want your community partners to apply to their practices on Monday?
Surgeons are often here on Friday and apply 6 years later, though. new technology will be all over for Monday. But if you're going to do something that's going to change our practice flow, surgeons don't often want to hear about that. Yeah. But I think there's a lot of concern in the neoadjuvant side that patients are going to get sick and they're not going to make it to surgery. There's a lot of talk about the 20% dropout. And some surgeons use that as a reason not to pursue this. I like to tell community surgeons and partners that you're going to be left behind if you're not doing this, because number one, the patients deserve it. We know that there's a benefit. Number two, I think it's actually expanding the number of patients we'll be able to treat surgically as we look into the stage three space, many of whom had gravitated to chemo radiation and immunotherapy, which is a fine treatment paradigm. But I think we're now offering these patients something different that should hopefully expand the number of patients who are treated with definitive surgical care, which I think is exciting for community surgeons. We have to have a balance of not being overly aspirational and sort of taking everybody to the operating room and thinking everybody can get neoadjuvant therapy. And so I think that's going to be a real challenge in the future, looking at how to balance those two things, pushing for this and really saying that it's appropriate, but not overshooting.
Stage three is such a complicated stage of disease, and the pendulum is always shifting one way or the other to or away from surgery. And I think Brendan's right. In the last 5 years, there was a real shift away from surgery, as there was such, you know, a nice improvement in survival with the Pacific regime. But you compare Pacific curves to, you know, CheckMate and Keno curves, and they're not close. So there is still a great advantage for those patients who are good surgical candidates to undergo surgery. And I don't think there's a radiation oncologist out there who would argue that good surgery provides better local control than good radiation. So I think they're on board. But bad surgery doesn't help any patients. So we do have to be thoughtful about what resectable disease looks like. And sometimes resection is in the eye of the beholder. But I think surgeons can't get, what do they say, big eyes. They can't overestimate what is realistic for us to resect. And while it's nice to think that these new medications can shrink tumors and take unresectable to resectable, I don't think we've proven that quite yet.
What are your definitions of resectability?
No, I always say what Jessica just said, that it's in the eye of the beholder. From about 40 years ago, where a surgeon talked about it might be different day to day, surgical unit and patient to patient. And it's pretty nuanced. And so I don't think that the classic definitions that people may have used in the communities hold true. And often that just meant, in many cases, stage three disease, not resectable. Single station stage three disease, not resectable. I even think multi-station N2 disease is often resectable. Certainly, I feel better doing that in the context of a lobectomy rather than a pneumonectomy. But most of these tumors are resectable. The question is just, you know, should we? And then can we do it with a lobectomy? Can we adequately clear the nodal disease? It's fluid, though, and it's really hard to define. I think it varies by individual patient. You can't help but being influenced by the patient in front of you. And that's probably operability more than resectability in some senses.
I think it brings up a really good point, is that it's a two-pronged thing. There's operability. What can your patient tolerate, and what's reasonable, and what's going to leave them in a reasonable shape? And then there's resectability. What's technically possible? What's the extent of disease where I can get an R0 resection? And both of those really need to be considered. And we will all go a bit further and stretch our limits for the 45-year-old who is otherwise incredibly healthy, because we know they could tolerate more. The European Society of Thoracic Surgery recently took on resectability, and it was really challenging. I think, you know, there were some easy parts to stage three that everyone agreed were clearly, you know, resectable. And those are kind of the node negative patients and things like that. But, you know, after that, there was a big middle ground where nobody agreed. And so it is a little bit in the eye of the beholder. And that's why I think it's kind of also goes back to, you know, having a good team so that, you know, everybody knows what to expect and the people they're working with and who to, you know, recommend for this therapy and who not. I will say that these resections are not always for the faint of heart. It's probably not what you want someone who doesn't do a lot of general thoracic surgery doing. That makes it all the more challenging.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by AstraZeneca. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.